Welcome to episode 23, aka the Michael Jordan of podcasts, of the ReWrap podcast, where we talk all things about the photo, video, and creative lifestyle. Opposite me is the viral filmmaker dynamo that is the Jaren Schneider.
Well, that's quite the introduction. And, who are you again?
I'm just some guy. I'm a photographer. My name is Cameron DeGoom, and I'm a portrait and headshot photographer, and I'm not here to sell you anything.
Shocking, neither am I.
There you go. Yeah. We're just going to give you our 2 cents. How about that? We'll give you something for listening. Okay. So this week, it's been a slow week.
Right, Jared? I mean, there's been stuff that came out, but it's not like there's anything. So we got news to talk about, but it's not like, oh my gosh, news. It's maybe one thing. The first thing on our list is like an oh my gosh news. The rest of it was just like, huh, that's interesting.
Yeah, if you're a, say, mirrorless filmmaker.
Yeah.
So Metabones just made all the speed boosters that are smart for Panasonic's have autofocus for the Canon glass.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. They released firmware that makes their smart adapters and any speed booster that was made S onwards, which is like the S. Or I'm sorry, not even S, on, S onwards, the one before the S, which was the original one, the Micro Four Thirds.
The regular version. Which was a dumb adapter, right? Because it wasn't smart, so we call it dumb.
I don't know if it has to be smart, because if they're going to add autofocus to it, then it has to work. So it's smart. The difference between the speed booster and a smart adapter is the speed booster is actually, they change the focal workings and add like a stop in there, while the smart adapters, it's just straight over, it just communicates with the camera. So it would be the 2x crop factor with a 24-70 on a smart adapter, but you'd be at 0.64 or 0.71 depending on which one you're using for the speed boosters, plus you also get an extra stop of light. So that's the difference.
Yeah. What I understand how a speed booster works is kind of like a magnifying glass, and it just condenses down light rays into a smaller area, say for a smaller sensor, and therefore you get the more depth of field, so more like, you know, out of focus bits when you're focusing on something close to your camera. That gives the illusion of a bigger sensor when you're shooting on a smaller camera. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what a speed booster does essentially, and they're all in the tout. And Jaren, by doing this process, I guess through physics, they're able to improve the quality of the glass.
Okay, well
hitting your sensor.
Yeah, that's specifically
charge. Talk to us about that.
Specifically in this new one they announced. So let's separate the what we're talking about first. First of all,
Speed Booster Ultra.
They made a new speed booster, the Ultra 0.71X, which I have pored over it, and I cannot find a difference between it and the S, the Speed Booster S. So if you're like wondering which one should I buy, the Ultra or the S?
Buy the Ultra.
I don't know. I mean, I think the Ultra is the newer version. It's going to be better.
That's what I think.
But
I think that too.
On paper, they look identical. I cannot tell them apart. But you and I agreed earlier before the show started that the Ultra is going to replace the S, because there's
that's what it looks like.
They look identical. I can't tell the difference. Anyway, so
and they did replace and by the way, also the S did replace a previous speed booster, which I believe was a non-smart dumb speed booster. Because that was the very original. It didn't have any. You couldn't change like the f-stop on a Canon EF lens unless it was a manual lens. Let's say a Rokinon EF mount.
So then you're okay. The history of the Micro Four Thirds, not counting the ones that are specific to Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera and the one that's specific to the. I guess you couldn't do the XL in here too, which is the one that was like the almost Super 35 on the GH4 conversion, but. There's the original Micro Four Thirds speed booster, which can have the firmware update, which gives autofocus. There's the S adapter, which is the one I currently own. There's the T-Speed Booster XL 0.64X, which is the one that's specific for GH4s. And then now there's the Ultra 0.71X adapter, which was just announced. And that
all this is, by the way, guys, if you're just confused, that's okay, because me and Jaren were totally worried.
Yeah,
we're
I'm going to try and make it a little bit less confusing in a second, but the Ultra is the only one, going back to a comment you made probably now 2 minutes ago, you said that they improves the MTF charts. This is the, I don't know, have they said this about every speed booster at this point?
Yeah.
They have?
I don't think they have, but there has been testing, and I don't remember who tested, but basically any speed booster will improve the quality of the
Metabones
light
has
rays.
Definitely stated that they're, this for sure, it was in their press release this time, that you will get a better performance out of your lens than you would without it. So like,
and I believe it.
They did a Zeiss Otis and they're showing, I don't know how to read MTF charts. I'm just going to assume these are right and awesome, but that it gets,
the
better.
The higher the line, the straighter the line, the better.
Okay.
More consistent, I think.
Well, in that case, I mean, there's a weird drop off on the far right end of the Otis on the speed booster.
That's your corner of the image.
Okay. Well, anyway, it got better and you got an extra stop and it's 39 millimeters instead of 55. So because of the change. Okay. So that aside, if you're looking to buy one of these things, you're probably incredibly confused because you don't know what you're going to buy. So let me go over, assuming that the Ultra is replacing the S, this is what you have to look at. The Ultra has a crop factor of 0.71X and gives you an additional one stop of light. It is compatible with the GH4, any of the OMD cameras from Olympus, the Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera, and the Blackmagic Cinema Camera, which has the Micro Four Thirds mount on it. Then, there is one specific for the Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera, and that has a crop factor of 0.58x, and an additional aperture stop of 1.66, and it is only compatible with the Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera because of flange distance. The next one after that is the one that's specific, quote-unquote specific, to the Blackmagic Cinema Camera, and that one is 0.64x and has an aperture stop addition of 1.33, but it works on both the Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera and the Blackmagic Cinema Camera, so you could use it on either of those, but you can't use it on like the GH4 or on any Olympus camera. And then finally...
Yeah, I'm already way over confused. And then, I know you're going to finish up, and then I got.
Okay, there's the Speed Booster XL, which is the one that was built specifically for the GH4, but apparently it also works on the Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera and the Blackmagic Cinema Camera that has the Micro Four Thirds mount. And this one is 0.64x, just like the one I just said was 64x time, so it's like a little bit better. And gives you an aperture stop of 1.33. So it's there's things about it that are better than the Speed Booster Ultra, but the Speed Booster Ultra works across better platforms. Like it's more works everywhere else. Now,
more universal.
Yeah, what they've said is standard Micro Four Thirds cameras like the GH4 have a total of approximately 4 millimeters of thickness of filter glass near the sensor, and the Speed Booster XL is designed to work optimally with this thickness of glass. The Blackmagic Cinema Camera and Pocket Cinema Camera have substantially thinner total filter glass thickness, which may cause noticeable aberrations when the Speed Booster XL, which is the one that's 0.64 times the last one, is used on a Blackmagic camera at large apertures. So they're suggesting that you don't use that one, even though you can and it won't break the camera. You should probably use one specifically designed for Blackmagic if you're going to do it. So there you go.
Yes, essentially, if you have a GH4, buy the XL. If you have a Blackmagic Cinema Camera or Pocket Cinema, buy the one specific to that. And I wouldn't even bother with the Ultra.
Really? You don't? Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess if you have an Olympus camera, you're not really filmmaking with the Olympus camera.
No. If you are filmmaking with the Olympus camera, God help you, my son.
Yeah, I don't know why you would. It's a much better still camera than it is a video camera. Kind of how like GH4 is a much better video camera than a still camera.
And I don't think they would be wanting the depth of field for filmmaking with a Blackmagic. I guess I'm literally psychologically profiling here. And that's how I'm arriving at these conclusions. I mean, I would understand like, you know what? All you had the money left was just for this Olympus. So you shot stills with it. And it does video and you really love video. So you really want to do video. So you go ahead and do video. But if you're going to save your money. Don't buy a Speed Booster. Just do the video as you will with your native lenses. That's fine. And if you want more depth of field, you're just going to have to maybe buy either 0.95 glass from Voigtlander or buy a used 5D Mark II. How about that? How about that, Jared? Because I think, a 5D, you know, a Speed Booster is kind of expensive because I'm looking
they're super expensive. $600. So the S, the one that I own, is $600. Now, the Ultra, the one that you and I think is replacing it, is $650. Yeah. It's even more expensive.
$650.
So, So you said go buy the Ultra. I'm saying buy the S.
I'm saying go buy the XL.
Okay, how much is the XL?
I don't know.
It's probably close.
Yeah, I think it's $600.
It's $650. It's the same price.
Oh, $650. So they've raised their prices for the new generation.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're already really expensive. Like that's I mean, they're super useful. But
so here's the dilemma, Jaren, because I'm in a situation where like nowadays you can buy a used GH4 if you hunt. You can buy a used GH4 for like $1,000, maybe $1,050, maybe $1,100. But basically, $1,000 gets you a new GH4. $650 gets you a Metabone speed booster. Then you're at $1,650, right?
Well, yeah, maybe you can find a used Metabone speed booster for less. Yeah,
you could do, but like I'm looking at one right now. It's $390, but that's probably an older one. I don't even know if it's a smart one. But the whole point is that you're going to be putting on Canon glass or Nikon glass.
Yeah, the right? Nikon ones are like half price. I don't know why, but maybe they're trying to move more of them. But if you have Nikon glass and you want to move to a Micro Four Thirds camera, your investment in Metabones is going to be significantly lower. They're like $400.
True. The only thing that annoys me about the Nikon mounts, the Nikon glass is fantastic, by the way. Guys, if you ever get AIS, Nikon AIS glass, that's fantastic. But if you get a Nikon mount, the only thing that sucks about it is that I think it's like one of the deepest flange distances for a 35mm camera, Jaren. So like, let's say you get a Canon EF mount, you can buy a Nikon adapter to fit your Nikon glass onto a Canon EF mount.
Correct. I've done that. I do that.
Yeah. So you could do that. That's a nice thing. Like you get two mounts in one, which is very nice. Hopefully you guys are still with us on this podcast. I've realized how dreary and dreadfully boring this content is. But there's a point to be made here, Jaren. We're trying to be filmmakers. We're trying to get into this little minutia of technical tools that help us create a kind of a cinematic look, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's important to try and like figure out what people should be buying here, because as soon as this...
This is Wild West territory.
Yeah. I mean, and there's only one company that's really doing it well, and that's Metabones.
Metabones. Metabones. And everyone else is copying them.
Yeah.
If you go to eBay.
Yeah. I would really like to buy only from Metabones because I trust them. But
yes.
People who are looking at this coming out are so... I'm part of a couple groups on Facebook, and as soon as this hit, there were multiple threads started, which was like, I have this. I was planning on buying this, but they just announced this. So what should I buy? And there wasn't a clear answer from anyone because nobody's really sure, because they all have different names, even though they have extremely similar specs and the pricing is now different. But what am I... So basically, we'll end with this. If you need a Metabone speed booster, go back and listen to what we just said, because we did break down specifically what they are. And in the show notes, I will link to a page where we do have that compatibility list that you can look at yourself with the actual speed booster product number. So you can go look it up by that product number to get the one you exactly need. But if you shoot on a Panasonic GH4, like I do, you probably are okay with the S. And if you don't want to buy the S because it's older, then get the XL because it's built specifically for the GH4. Don't worry about it. Just get that one.
You know, I listen to podcasts at like 1.5, 1.75, almost 2x. Go back and listen to Jaren when he's talking about this and listen at like half speed just to
so
just
slow.
To get all this right.
Okay. I agree with you. That was a little thick. Let's move on to something else.
This week, more fun. Let's talk about Meerkat.
Which is weird. Why are we talking about Meerkat?
Meerkat's back in the news.
Didn't they phase themselves out of existence? And actually, Twitter phased them out of existence or attempted to.
But they're still around.
Yeah, they are. And they announced something kind of cool.
Hey, Jaren, remember, I know you don't see my video, but I'm grabbing the stream.
Are you?
The Meerkat animation of grabbing the stream. Which is the best.
Yeah, that is the best animation ever. Meerkat managed to make themselves relevant last week by saying that they are working with like the GoPro's tech to allow you to stream directly from it. Now, it doesn't work with the latest generation of GoPros. It only works on the 3s, but they're working on the 4s. I thought this was really cool because...
I think so, too.
Their main competitor, Periscope, and because Periscope is owned by Twitter basically cut the legs out from underneath Meerkat when they were growing at their strongest, and Periscope essentially replaced it. But Meerkat now has something that Periscope doesn't, which is connection to an actual camera, something that you don't have to have on your phone. So you can actually set up a bunch of GoPros and stream from them or just one, or stick it in a corner or whatever. And
yes, you can only do the one, because unless you had multiple iPhones with multiple Meerkat accounts,
it would be neat if they allowed you to pick source. if you could see the sources coming in and pick which one that you're actually going to stream from. That would be neat.
That's a producer switcher type of role. Can we go back a second and just figure out, like, hey Jaren, you have a client. Clients has asked you that we're going to hook GoPro up to this person's like forehead. We got a forehead mount. And what we want to do is we want to see in real time from his feed on his head over the internet. How would you do it? And you don't have Meerkat. Let's just say that right now. How would you do it? Go, just walk us through right now.
I don't know.
Right. That's how cool this is. That's what I'm trying to say. This is how cool it is, because I don't think we have the ability to be able to, like, first of all, yes, you can stream from your iPhone. I get that. But now we have a very small device, a small camera. So let's say it's kind of how, like, if you watch NASCAR or Formula One racing, where they have these cameras in the noses of the car. And now you can do that, whereas theirs is obviously wired up.
What I was going to say was, yeah, this opens things up for adventure people, or yes, like exciting folks who put stuff, like, who have fans who want to see what they do on a daily basis. Like, they could put a camera specifically for Meerkat on the front of a car at, you know, the Formula, or I guess I wouldn't want to do it on the front, like maybe on the back of the headrest or something like that. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, they do that.
That is the only way you can see that particular feed, and that you can build the following that way. That following is actually, like, trackable, traceable, and you can actually figure out who they are. It's really great for marketers who they can get actual data off of it. That's cool. And the fact that they've started with GoPro, and I know they're using, because the GoPro has the Wi-Fi transfer, and that's how they're doing it. That means I'm pretty sure they're not far from doing that with any camera with a Wi-Fi connection.
Well, Jaren, why do you think the GoPro 4 and the GoPro Session cannot do this right now?
It might be just the way that this, I have no idea. There's probably a software difference between among them, not between, because there's three among. So that's the only thing I can think of, that GoPro did something differently with the new generation of cameras that communicates with the phone differently. That's the only way I can think about it. But it doesn't seem like Meerkat's too far away from integrating from the 4. So I don't know. That's all I got. Okay.
Well, another interesting Meerkat news, Al Roker. Yes, we are talking about Roker. Al Roker from the Today Show. He is actually airing a new cooking series on Meerkat. And the reason why is just because he feels that, what is a staple like Al Roker doing on, like, making a show for Meerkat? And essentially, he feels he's just, trying to be cutting edge, just see what it's like
he's
to
hip.
Do this as an experiment. It's hip, yeah. And more importantly, he says, quote, "You don't know where it's going to go, but I think it's going to be fun to be the first out there. It's not like anybody's going to get hurt," period, end quote.
That's what he said? It's not like anyone's going
to
get hurt?
That's exactly what he said. He said it to Variety. So essentially, as long as,
that's such a weird quote. It's not like anyone's going to get hurt. That's like something you hear on like a sitcom shortly thereafter, followed by someone getting hurt.
Yeah, with an anvil falling.
Yeah, right.
Piano dropping from the sky.
Oh, that's Looney Tunes.
I watched too many cartoons.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. Like, okay, I guess the idea is you record it, you can, and see it live, and then you can watch the replay afterwards. That's essentially what I understand is what's going on. The only thing I question, Jaren, is if I'm on mobile and I'm watching this, this better be a damn quick show, like 2-3 minute cooking segment, not even a show, segment. Because if it's for half an hour, I don't think I'm going to be sitting and watching on my phone for half an hour.
It's streaming from my phone too, which is pulling a lot of data, which is expensive.
And not like Meerkat has the best like controls for playback, for like play, replay, back 10 seconds, fast forward, rewind. No, you hit play and you watch and you don't get any control. Did you know that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that kind of sucks. At least with Snapchat, you can tap and go to
the next snap. I don't mind that there's no replayability. I think that's part of the goodness of it.
But if it's so long, Jared?
Yeah, well, when is he starting? Does it say?
I have no idea when he starts. He says, I don't know, but it looks like from a screen cap that with a tweet posted 10:22 a.m. 27th of July 2015, which is today, that you can actually go and see, I think at Al Roker is his Twitter, his show.
I bet it was probably 10 to 15 minutes long. That's what I'm going to guess. Okay. Yep. Which I think is fine. It's not for everyone. I like this idea.
Yeah. Not for those who don't cook. Yes.
And I think that having the ability to do this from a GoPro opens more situations up to stuff like this. As long as Meerkat keeps its... my only problem with them when I was first using them is that the stream was not particularly great and it would cut out a lot. And I've heard that people who use Periscope find it to be a better experience. It's a little bit cleaner. But I don't know. I like that Meerkat is pushing themselves in a direction that's different than where they were originally, because, you know, clearly Twitter's going to not let them go there. So to do something where they get to integrate other cameras and let people like Al Roker make TV, quote, TV shows.
Yeah, yeah.
It's neat. I like it. I'm a fan.
I like the experimentation. I'm good with that.
Do I even have Meerkat on my phone still? I don't even know.
I believe I do. I have over 900 apps. I'm ridiculous.
Okay. Oh, I do have
Jaren.
Yeah.
Sigma, who we're very big fans of,
yeah.
They especially with their new art line of lenses, they came out with a new lens.
They did.
Sigma 24mm to 35mm f2 zoom, which I believe, and it's for full frame cameras.
Yep.
You got one. They sent you one.
Yep. I have it right
now. Which I only just found out at the beginning of the show.
Yep.
So
it's $1,000. Yeah.
A good, very good price. And essentially, I mean, look, you get these staple focal lengths, 24, 28, and 35. And obviously, they're in between. Mm-hmm. But that's basically three kind of...
It's three lenses in one. That's the benefit of it. We were talking with Tam, the guy who we had on the show earlier, who's a systems engineer for Resource. He is a humongous fan of this lens, more so than any of the other lenses Sigma has produced to this point.
Why is that?
And he says he likes it because he could take the three lenses he currently carries around with him all the time and just condense them down to one, the 24, the 28, and the 35. And I've been using this lens. I haven't really gotten too hardcore into the testing yet. I was going to, and then I had a bad experience. I was testing it this past weekend, and I went to a place in inner central California. It took me 3 hours to get there. I got there and I was there with my dog and I walk up and dogs aren't allowed. So I couldn't go down there. And it was Natural Bridges in Central California, which is like made from rivers that did it. Made these.
Why dogs not allowed?
I don't know. Because it's, quote, something along the lines of it being an environmentally sensitive area. And I think it's because they don't want to have to ask people to clean up after their dog and then have the, of course, number of people who aren't going to do it. So I would have cleaned up after my dog. I brought poo bags, but folks I know won't, so they banned them altogether. At any rate, I was going to test it and didn't. I will find a way to do it coming up. But Tam, like I said, thinks this lens is great. I don't know. This is the first time that I don't really care how great this lens is. It will probably be great.
Why do you not care how great this lens is going to be? Why do you not
care? Because it doesn't affect me that much. It seems like it's not... The focal range is so limited. Like I put this on my camera and I zoomed and I could barely tell the difference. And so I'm thinking.
So are you saying? Would you say it's better off just to have, let's say, a single prime? Let's say you had a 28mm f/2 prime instead of this lens.
I would rather have a 24 f/2 or a 35 f/2. 28 to me is weird.
Oh,
but
well, I just chose the middle.
Right. Okay. Maybe. I don't think it's better. I just find this lens. Here's what I think about Sigma. I think of Sigma as kind of like a watch company. And these major Swiss watch companies, what they'll do every year is they make a watch that they'll only make like five of. And the whole point of this watch is to show the world and the other competitors out there that this is how you make a watch. This is what we...
It's an exercise in technical excellence.
It's beautiful. It tells the time still. But that's less the degree that this is a work of art, and we know what we're doing, and we're the best at it. And I feel like that's what Sigma's doing every year now. There hasn't been the last 2 years now. They did the 18 to 35 f/1.8, which was for APS-C and sensors, and that thing too was it's beautiful. They made this lens to prove that it was possible. And the 24 to 35 f/2 to me feels the same way. Like we built this lens to show that it was possible. Nobody else would do this. But we did. So I'm sure it's going to perform great. I'm sure I'll give it a great review in terms of like if you want this lens, if you want this focal range. But Sigma is really, really beating the dead horse of this focal range. They're crushing it. They have their last like four out of the last five lenses are in this focal range. 18 to 35, 24 millimeter.
Which you're a big fan of.
Yeah, I love the 18 to 35, the one I mentioned earlier. I use that all the time. It's on my, because 18 is just wider enough to be a difference when you zoom to 35. But 24.
And again, you're using it on a, I mean, the 18 to 35 is on a,
it's on a crop sensor body, but I put it on my GH4 with a Metabone speed booster, and it's sharp as all get out. But, you know, okay, we have the 24, we have the 24 to 35, we have the 18 to 35, and we have the 35 millimeter. Like, the only one we're missing is, and we'll probably get it, watch, is it going to be a 28 millimeter F1.4 prime. And they will have completely saturated the wide angle market. Then we have the 50, and then we also have the 24 to 105 F4. So we're, again, back down to 24. We're in that focal range. There are just a ton of options here.
Yeah, now I'm all confused. I'm all Metabones confused out now, Jeremy.
Well, that's not even talking about, like, put it, when once you Metabones adapt it, what that actually becomes the effective focal range. God. But anyway, what I do like about this lens quite a bit is my main problem with the 24 to 105, and the reason it's not on my camera as much as it used to be, is that the focus ring and the zoom ring are so weird. The focus ring is in the front. The focus ring is in the back on the 24 to 105, and it's also like razor thin. It's maybe half an inch wide, so you have to really get in there and feel for it. What they did on the 24 to 35 is what they've done on the 18 to 35 1.8 as well, which is just have two really large ones and the focus ring is up front. I don't know why some randomly these lens companies will make the lenses have the focus and zoom rings reversed. It's super, super confusing and I hate it.
That always throws me off whenever I use a Nikon lens because the f-stop ring is backwards. Like it spins.
The only manufacturer where if you try attaching it to the camera, you have to turn it a different way too.
Yeah, you have to turn it on. You have to attach it like counterclockwise.
The only company that does that.
And it throws me off because I guess my Leicas, my Mamiya 645 glass, Canon glass, what is else? Micro Four Thirds, all that stuff rotates on and rotates off the same way, and f-stops go the direction I expect, which is, I guess, if you're looking through a camera, it's clockwise.
Yeah.
They make good glass.
My statements with this lens. You know what's really weird is Sigma has a Sigma version of this lens that's for full frame cameras. Sigma doesn't make a single full frame DSLR.
Well, I thought they make their what's that Sigma DSLR they made, the SP1?
It doesn't matter. It was APS-C.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know why they make one for Sigma. That's funny. I don't know. If you have a Sigma camera, they're still supporting you.
Well, yeah, it's good. They've got a new product to buy. Yeah.
Anyway, this is a cool lens. I think it's a show off lens, and I don't think that's a problem. I just think that they're doing is they're proving to the world that they can do it. And I actually had an interview with Kazuto-san, the president of the company, which I'll be publishing next week, along with not going to be next week. It's going to be this week. It's going to be Thursday. I'll publish it the day basically that the 24 to 35 becomes available. And I asked him a lot of questions regarding this sort of thing. So it'll be interesting to have y'all check out his perspective and see why they're doing what they're doing and why they're not doing what they're not doing. But like I said, I don't know. This lens is weird to me.
Okay. So it's a technical exercise in what Sigma can do.
Yeah. And I just
no one else is doing this.
I just don't see, I don't know. Yeah. Whatever. Okay. Tam thinks it's awesome. Tam wants it so badly.
First of all zooms that we know of that are, you know, industry standard, they're all 2.8. 2.8 f-stop, right?
Yeah.
This f-stop is f2, mm-hmm. but the range is limited. I think that's because if they were to make an f2,
huge,
say 24 to 70, it would be massive. It would be monstrous. A bazooka.
Yeah, like
it would be ridiculous.
I think,
and so this is why, yeah, we'll keep it normal at 24 to 35.
Yeah, I think maybe if they made a 50 to 70, that might be possible. I don't know. It might still start getting kind of enormous. But the 18 to 35. I thought was going to be...
That's a good range.
I didn't think... when that. I first... So in the defense of Sigma, when I first saw that lens, I did not think it was going to be a good enough focal range to work with. And
because the equivalent focal range is what? It's like 24 to 50, right? That's if equivalent to a full frame, yeah, camera. That's what that works
out. I just thought it was going to be like, eh. But in using it over the last year, I mean, I love that lens. So maybe my opinion on the 24 to 35 will change after I use it some more.
I think the quality of that glass in that Sigma zoom that you just talked about, 18 to 35 f 1.8,
yeah,
is very good quality glass.
Yeah, well, everything Sigma makes is good quality glass now. Like, literally everything. They haven't made it a bad product in like 4 or 5 years. So,
this is true. All right, let's move on and let's talk about another camera thing. Please, guys, stick with us. We'll get through this quickly and we'll talk more about idea stuff after this that you guys can be upset about or happy about too. So let's talk about Panasonic. Through Panasonic New Zealand has basically confirmed something by retweeting one of our tweets. Is that right,
Jen? No, they confirmed something by talking to somebody else that was caught by EOS HD. I republished the article in the news, and then Panasonic New Zealand reconfirmed their confirmation by tweeting our article. So they're definitely not right. Like, oh, we're sorry, we didn't mean to tweet that. They didn't do this whole, like, delete the tweet sort of thing. They still are standing firmly behind it, that they are releasing Vlog by October.
Now, this is a big update. How long has the GH4 been out, Jared?
A year and a half?
Yeah, I think you're right, a year and a half. And finally, we're getting, or at least all the filmmakers are very excited to get Vlog. Now, what is Log? Talk about what is Log, Jared. What is
my Log? Understanding of Log is that it is like it maximizes the dynamic range while you're shooting so that if you are planning on color correcting in post, this is the best way to do it because it gives you the most variance in what you can do in post. Because
why not just shoot raw?
Well, because I can't shoot raw. It's on GH4.
That's right.
Otherwise, I wouldn't care. I would be shooting in raw. But it's also hard as heck to edit in raw. It's a little easier to edit in Vlog.
I read a little article about where Log came from and how it evolved through the years. But essentially, it's a process in which a digital sensor and a high codec, like a high bitrate codec, can extrapolate the most amount of color information in a frame. That's what it is. That's what log is. And usually it tends to look very gray. And it looks very desaturated.
Yeah, it looks very flat. I see green boring. When I see it. I
see green.
Yeah, it looks a little green to me. But
red roses too.
When you edit this, like in Premiere, when you go in there and you try and change, you adjust the contrast, you add some color grading to it. There's no area. It's like maximizing what the camera was capable of getting in that scene, and it makes your shot look a lot better and more. You have more to work with when you're out there doing it. If you plan to go
exactly.
Straight
but
from
a big key, Jaren, hold on. A big key about this, again, is having a high bit rate. Because if you shoot at a low bit rate and you shoot with log, as soon as you start to try and like bump up some contrast or try and eliminate or try and bring out the color of the footage, it will fall apart and look brittle, look disgusting.
So this is why people are thinking like this is finally a reason to use an external recorder because we can get 10-bit.
Yeah. Yeah, you can totally get 10-bit. Yeah. I guess you could do that. That would be actually. I didn't even think about that, Jared.
Yeah, there was no reason right now.
You just fingered it.
Ooh,
you got it.
That's a reference, by the way, to our
NASA episode. Because I was so proud.
You fingered it.
I got a.
Yeah, so that's what I'm thinking is like. There's finally a reason to use the HDMI out to do 10-bit because at this point there really isn't. There's like no noticeable difference in color when you are going 8-bit to 10-bit, especially when you go to online. But if you are...
Are you sure, Jared? Because I've seen it, and I've seen people compare
it. I don't see it. Dave Dugdale agrees with me.
Maybe it's Vimeo that I see it on and not on YouTube.
It's not worth it. It's just not worth it. You're making the camera bigger than it needs to be for a marginal improvement. But with Vlog, now we have a reason to, because now we can, with the maximized bitrate, the editing is going to get a lot better. You're going to have a lot more options and you're going to be able to create something a lot more beautiful that you wouldn't have been able to do before.
Agreed.
So now there's a reason for the 10-bit HDMI out.
So Jaren, question. Mm. Cinematic, making things cinematic. Would I get a more cinematic look by recording 10-bit out of the GH4, 10-bit color out and recording that to an external recorder than if I were to internally record in the GH4 in 8-bit color, would my 10-bit, log, after grading, turn out to be more cinematic than my 8-bit log?
Probably.
Recorded internally in camera.
Probably.
Good. That's like the bottom line. Why would you do it?
It'd look better.
More
cinematic.
More cinema. Yeah.
Get better color.
Because the big challenge I guess the big challenge is, and we're just gonna actually, Jaren, I'm gonna rearrange stories here, but one aspect of this is that, you know, because we have digital sensors are so clean and crisp that they tend to look more like what people say it looks like video as opposed to film, like, you know, mm-hmm. and that's what, when things look like film, things look what we say cinematic. Mm-hmm. You know, you have depth of field, you have kind of film was never like super crisp and sharp like a digital sensor is. So and this brings us to the next story, which is the iPhone Film Festival, which is at iPhoneFF.com, and they actually announced their winners. And we watched, me and Jaren watched a few of these, and one of the ones I watched, which was the overall winner, was Uneasy Lies the Mind, which is a first place winner. And you can actually, I think for $4 on Vimeo, you can watch this movie. And it won, and it was shot on an iPhone 5 and 5S. And they used a turtleback, which is, I think it's from Hong Kong, this little adapter that goes on your phone that gives you, how do you call it? It's like a focusing screen, Jaren, and then you can adapt a lens to it. And so they adapted a Nikon 1.4 lens. They don't tell me which focal length. But essentially, they're able to get depth of field, and that little focusing screen, it's hard to describe what a focusing screen is, but essentially the iPhone camera is looking at a opaque screen of which a Nikon lens is projecting its image onto, and then the iPhone is recording that. So they're kind of cheating their depth of field, but they're still getting it, and it looks dirty. And because it looks dirty, it looks cinematic.
My only problem with this whole thing is that it exists at all. Why do we need a separate film festival for iPhones? Why can't what we produce on anything be at the same level or be looked at the same, with the same amount of credence as any other thing I've shot on?
I get what you're saying. I think it's a very fair point. It should be because Tangerine at Sundance,
exactly.
Right? It wasn't an iPhone only category.
I watched a couple of the films that did not win, and they were very clearly shot. Like, I could see it immediately that, okay, yes, this was clearly shot on an iPhone, and it was distracting to me because I could mm-hmm. see, like, oh, they missed their focus right there. The iPhone was clipping, and the blacks were crushed here because it was an iPhone 4S or whatever. There would be a reason why that wouldn't win, and it wouldn't just be because maybe the storytelling was great, but the acting was whatever. The ones that were on the winning list, I think, could have competed in any film festival, and they should. And I think that mm-hmm. by having one specific to the iPhone Film Festival, you end up having it diluted with these other films that aren't normally that great anyway. I don't care what you shoot it on. I just want to see you make something beautiful. And I think that when you condense them into these side competitions, it gives them even less credence than they already get, which is very little. I don't like that. I think these should be with everything else.
There is a film here that was second place winner, Romance in NYC by Tristan Pope, a photographer, videographer out of New York City, who shot a video called Romance in NYC on an iPhone 6. And he was a lot of official selections in, like, this is Madrid Film Festival, the type is too small to read, but a winner in the New Media Film Festival. There was a Phone Film Festival, again, that he was part of official selection of the New Filmmakers of 2015. So he got a lot of different awards at different festivals and competitions and such for just this one video. And I watched the video, and I think it's very well done as far as the story, the music, and the visuals put together. And it would have been, I imagine it would have been difficult to shoot this with a bigger camera, and having a small camera like an iPhone 6 lent itself to be more nimble. And I recommend you guys to watch it. But I hear what you're saying, Jaren. And I think also, I think people can, it's up to the filmmakers to, you know, submit it to other film festivals. But it's also good to know, like, here's what you can do, and here's what people have done before you. So this way, if you're either needing or seeking inspiration or seeing, well, I don't know how we could do this, but here's what other people do.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a good one to look at, like, how should I grade footage that I took on an iPhone? And you can actually look at examples of what other people have done with it. I can see that, but I really respect...
I think that is the biggest...
Because
what
of you.
What you just said, Jared?
What? Go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, before you start, because I know you're going to say some, but before you start, that is the biggest thing that I've been researching and trying to figure out is, how best to grade iPhone footage when iPhone does not have log.
Right.
And the only thing you can do is use Filmic Pro, shoot at the highest bit rate you can, and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Essentially. And you could, but go you on. Can, what were you saying,
Jared?
You
can still get good looks out of it. But I don't know what I was going to say anymore. I feel like...
You said, I think you were going to say that I'm a proponent
So you actually, talking to you over the past, 23 weeks, you've definitely turned me on to alternative ways of storytelling. And I'm very proud of people who don't do things the way everyone else says they should. And that's been my, mentality forever. I was always the little guy with the crazy ideas. And I always wanted someone to respect those ideas. And now that I do respect these ideas, these people who do this, I think they should be allowed and should be pushed to give the way that they shoot, put that up against someone shooting on a Red or shooting with a GH4 or shooting on a whatever. Because when you're making films like this and you're focused on storytelling and making something beautiful with stories, what you capture it on is even less important than when you're a photographer wants to take the best possible photo for an art book. That does start to matter. But when you're all you're focusing on is that's what I love about movies is you can look at so much more than just the quality of the footage. That's why people still love movies from the 20s. The footage is the quality is not
it great. Still sucks you in.
Yeah, because the storytelling is good. So I just think that by this being an iPhone film festival, now if you win this and this is your award, let's say this is the only award you won, but you made a fantastic film and you've entered it other places and it didn't do anything. This is the one film you won. Well, you won because it's on an iPhone. It's the best one on an iPhone. I hate that. I don't want that to happen. So I feel like it.
Right.
So I don't know. I like that there's a film festival for these people, but at the same time, I don't. I want them to be in the same film festivals as everybody else.
I hear you.
I'm all for equality.
Yeah, it'd be like having here's the Ari Alexa Film Festival, aka Oscars.
Right.
That's the Oscars. Yeah. That's what I just said.
Let's have a film festival for every possible camera out there. That's a perfect example of why I think this is silly.
Yes, but at least for iPhone, I think it's a good resource, Jared. I think it's a good public service that there's. I am surprised at the amount of video and media that's on here. Of just people making films on an iPhone. And I'm very impressed and I'm very happy about that. I am actually one of those people who is investing in and moving into making sure I can do more video with my iPhone just because I want something small. I want something compact. I'm not a cinematographer. I don't know how to work. I don't even know how to grade yet, Jaren. I don't know how to do it. I post-process my own photos, but I know that's not the same as grading.
No, grading is... for anyone wondering what the difference between a color grade and color adjustments is, adjusting is you make something look like what you originally saw, while grading is giving it a specific look that may not be realistic, but changes the feel of the footage, and that feel is what you're going for. So gritty looking film. So when you look at stuff like Sin City,
I do that to my images.
Sin
as
City
well
is definitely graded, very graded.
All right, I gotta watch that.
So there you go, that's the difference.
I will watch Sin City.
And you know what? Grading is hard. Speaking of grading, by the way, side note: today, DaVinci Resolve 12 was announced by Blackmagic.
Hey, this is big news. It's an editor, right? It's a nonlinear editor like Premiere Pro or Final Cut.
Correct. It's an editor, right? But it's specifically designed. You can edit fully in it if you want to. I think you'd be crazy to, but you can if you want. It's specifically made for color graders, color artists, colorists.
DaVinci Resolve.
Yeah, it's super hard to use.
And it's free, Jaren, right?
Yeah, so here's the thing that's kind of cool that they did. They have always had DaVinci Resolve Lite, which when you hear that, you think, so it's not the full version. No, it's the it is the full version. That's the thing. DaVinci Resolve Lite.
What's the difference then?
They give you really high-end pro stuff. Specific for different GPUs and for different monitors and stuff like that, where the connections work very, very specifically. That's what you would need the real DaVinci Resolve for. But Lite is good enough for just about anyone. And you can. The cool thing about DaVinci Resolve is if you ever do shoot RAW with your Magic Lantern or anything like that, you can put the footage into DaVinci Resolve and watch it and edit it directly in there. You can't do that in Premiere. You can't just dump in all your RAWs and hope for the a video screen to come out. You have to export them and then bring them in. Yeah, you can't put RAWs in Premiere. I've tried, unless that's been updated in CC 2015. I haven't tried since then. But in DaVinci Resolve, because it's made for use with Blackmagic cameras as well, and Blackmagic shoots in RAW, you can pull in full RAW footage and edit it and see what's changing in that edit across the board, which is super handy for anyone editing RAW. But it's also great for color.
Sounds pretty sweet.
Yeah, I just, there's certain functions of it that just truly baffle me. I have no idea what I'm doing, but it's free. The beta is free, and they've renamed it from DaVinci Resolve Lite to just DaVinci Resolve, so people stop thinking it's not the full version. And then there's like DaVinci Resolve Studio is like the what was used to be what was known as the full version, but you can get DaVinci Resolve for free anytime you want.
That's like buying, like, I don't know, yogurt light, and then all of a sudden yogurt light
is just yogurt. Just
yogurt. And then you get, and then there's an extra pro version called yogurt probiotic.
Or something like that, or yogurt full fat.
Which is funny because yogurt's already a probiotic. Yeah. That's the joke.
Oh, is it?
Nutrition joke. Sorry.
Activia. Yeah.
Okay. We got one more. One more. I'm trying to find my tab, Jaren. Hold on. Where the hell's my tab? One more story is, was photography optimized for white skin color?
I think this article is such bunk, but continue.
All right. So this is just an article on priceonomics.com talking about how, I guess, how film came about and how the people who invented color film were basically a couple white dudes and they were targeting it towards white dudes. Tell me, Jaren, you probably know it better than I do. So you
can't. I don't care what his argument is. I don't care anything about what he says. It sounds like someone started with this idea and went and found some facts to back it up. Because in my mind, film was developed for light, not skin color. People who built...
See, that makes sense to me.
People built, it's kind of a weird word, developed, huh? It's a pun. Developed film to adjust to light. I'm glad you got it. It's funny, right? Because it's funny because you develop film.
Yes.
But they made it for light, not for color, people's skin tones. And this is coming from two brown men. We're not like defending the whiteness of
you're
white.
Kind of very light brown though.
Yeah, Jaren. But I'm not like white. I'm definitely not white.
You're more banana tone. I don't want to say the other word.
That's great.
You're more banana tone.
That's great. But I just think that this was someone going out and looking for a reason to, like, so that some of the examples are showing like the school portraits with African Americans and Anglo-Saxon folks right next to each other. And how the way that the Anglos look is so much better than the way that the African Americans look. It's just because the exposure of the photographer was set for the white people. That's all the photographer. It's not necessarily anything to do with the film. All you had to do is expose slightly longer, and it's just the way light works. When it hits a dark subject, you got to expose longer in order to get it.
So you understand, like, the reason why when I shoot portraits of darker skinned people, I have to adjust my lighting because I actually have to go a little bit, first of all, a little bit brighter, and I have to make sure they get matted down, right? So I don't get as much.
And it's the same thing with products. If you shoot a black product and a white product, you got to adjust for them differently. If you put a black product next to a white product and attempt to light them identically, you're going to have a problem.
Yes, because the darker color sucks in a little bit more light, and the white one reflects more light. That's what it is. Bounces more light, if you will.
I actually read the comment. I never read the comments.
This is not a racist thing.
Read the comments. This guy, I actually agree with. I think this is funny what he says. This is the first time I ever agree with like an old person telling a young person to shut up. But he says, pretty inventive history, but it's total crap. Written no doubt by some starry-eyed hipster millennial who wants it so bad to be true. And you know what? That's probably what happened.
Probably, yeah.
He says, I'm a child of the 60s.
We're not trying to make this about racism. No, it's not. At least I think that the article's, but it felt like the article a little bit was.
No, the article was. The article's trying to make us like feel bad. I don't know what are we supposed to feel bad that it's black skin doesn't expose the same as white skin? This is ridiculous. Yeah. To me, it started out, it's the author, him or herself, I can't even see a name on this thing, is racist.
Rosie Seema.
Like, that person right there looking at this is attempting to find truth, and in doing so is showing that they are definitely not colorblind.
You can tweet her at Rosie, R-O-S-I-E-C-I-M-A, Seema.
I'm not.
On Twitter.
I'm not going to tweet her, but you guys are all welcome to. I don't know. This is just so crazy. It's stupid.
Yeah. Photography was, the way I understood photography was introduced to me was that photography was invented by engineers. This is why we have things like stops that are half a stop or twice as much. And everything about photography is basically kind of, it's a tool. So everything's kind of engineered. So your shutter speeds, your ISO, your ASA, everything is in the same kind of language as we call stops of light. That's how we measure it, right? And even in filmmaking, it's T stops. This is right, Jaren, right?
Yes, that's for cinema, yeah.
Yeah, for cinema. So everything's kind of just based around this dividing by two or multiplying by two phenomena in photography, filmmaking, everything. So, and it's just about light. That's all it is. It's not really anything more than that. It's not racist or anything. And it just still happens that, yes, some people have a lower contrast in skin tone and some people have a higher contrast skin tone. And you know what? You could even apply this to makeup. You could say makeup's racist. Makeup's not racist, guys. But if you ever look at the picture of Katy Perry without makeup, that's what I mean. No contrast. You add makeup, there's contrast. And then you can see more of it. Yeah, it's and then if you want more, I guess if you want more light bouncing off of your whatever you do, let's say bodybuilders, they purposely tan themselves extra dark or even kind of slightly dye their skin that they wash off afterwards. And they do it dark so that way the lights that are on them bounce and reflect their, and it shows more tone of their muscles. Do you know that, Jaren?
I do now.
Well, there you go. And that's all basically engineering or manipulating light to achieve a desired outcome.
The last sentence in this article really is rubbing me the wrong way.
How is it rubbing you? Say it. Read it out loud.
It's about a teacher in Missouri on filmmaking. She says she's teaching her students that she had to learn through the years of politics, experience, and innovation that the tools used to make film and the science of it are not racially neutral. Okay. It's not that it's not racially neutral. It's like, it's not stereoscopic. It's like our vision is not neutral. Like the technology is not.
It's as if
making me so mad.
Everyone has a color, and I think a lot of it has to do with darkest. You know, people when I shoot with kinos, which are constant light, and I have a subject with very light eyes. Let's say they're from further away from the equator, like Scandinavia, and they have these ice cold blue or ice cold gray eyes. They have a terrible hard time.
They can't look at bright
being
light
in front of my lights. No, they can't. Yeah. They can't.
They're that's physically limited.
Where they come from with their genealogy is such that they didn't get much light, and so therefore they can actually see more in the dark than say someone from along the equator, say someone from Africa or Latin America, where you take or India even, where you typically find people who have very dark brown eyes, and so therefore like I can stare at those lights not necessarily all day but for quite some time.
Yeah.
But I know that I can't see as good in the dark as they can.
That certainly explains why my night vision's pretty awful. Yeah. All right.
Well, there you go. That makes two of us.
I'm done talking about this. This is just making me furious.
So let's go on to new cameras and motivation. So this one, I'll explain to you, Jaren.
Well, essentially, before we go on to this, I'd just like to point out that yes. I didn't want to stop you midway before that, but you said that was our last story, and I knew it wasn't. But
I lied. I lied. I'm very sorry, gentlemen.
I was just let you roll with it.
All right, so Cody Preeb, I follow this guy on Twitter. I do not know him personally. I just follow him on Twitter. And you know what? He wrote about how he talked about a lot about stuff. He talked, it's a very short blog post. And he was listening to a podcast. I kind of know which one he's talking about. But the podcast he was listening to follows the exact same structure for years. And the rundown's like this. At first, there's the introductions and discussions on what services the photographers offer that are on the show. Then they talk about a new camera or our cameras are changing. We kind of did that a little bit, didn't we? Yeah.
I think we do that every week.
Yeah. And then they talk more about the host's lessons and seminars that they teach. And then they end with a discussion on recommended products to purchase, which is why I started the show with, I haven't got anything to sell you. That was my roundabout way of like, if you're listening, you're being rewarded now. But yeah, I really don't have anything to sell. You can give me 5 stars on iTunes for reviewing this podcast. This is about as much I'm going to ask you to pay for something. And that's free, by the way. You just got a single click on 5 stars. You don't even have to write a reason of why you love it. You just go 5 stars. Good enough for me. But he's talking about how, all these details of just kind of, you know, he's almost calling out the podcast. And in a way, we can call it ourselves, too, on this journey. Like, there's always this new crap coming out. New speed booster. A new zoom lens, right? And they don't really talk about, like, and this is what we always try and talk about at the end of our shows, is about kind of the philosophy behind, say, making art. Or making good work, either way you want to call it, making art, making good work, I see both the same in my eyes. And he just has the ambition of just wanting to make more better looking photos in general, as opposed to just only when he's working. And you know how we talk about sub cameras on the show? Jaren, you have your iPhone and I have my basically.
I'm actually testing Leica. A new sub camera right now, the Canon G3X.
You got the G3X? That's cool.
Yeah, I have it in a bag behind me somewhere.
I'm going to rename sub camera, Jaren, not sub camera anymore. I'm just going to call it like when I shoot for me, the shoot for me camera. And I think this is the reason why, like, cameras like the X100, which is just a very good camera, a nice size sensor, and one lens, you cannot change lenses, are very popular. And Cody has the example of, he has a Contax T2, which I think has like a 35mm Carl Zeiss lens on it. And you know, it's a film camera. He's using Kodak Tri-X film. And you turn it on, the little lens like zooms out, you know, battery powered. And then he shoots with that. And it's a camera that's small enough that fits in his pocket. And he uses that to shoot like his family. And that's what he does. That's his like me camera. Because something small, you don't got to think about. And I get that. Like, that's kind of how I've been shooting when I shoot for me. I don't shoot with other lenses. Or when I have to work, yes, I have those other lenses. And those are for work. But when I'm shooting just stills for me, it's just me and either. Now it's been the 35. It used to be the 50. I may go back to the 50, but for me, I'm just happy with one camera, one lens, and I don't think about the tech, the camera itself. I just look for the moments, and I'm a part of those moments when I'm experiencing them, and then I document as I go. I'm not working at that point. I'm just enjoying with my camera.
All right.
Well, I was going to ask you, if you talk about it. You know, you have your sub camera, as you say, is your iPhone.
My iPhone, yeah.
But when you do you ever like shoot video for yourself or shoot stills for yourself? And if you do, what are you using besides your iPhone?
Nothing. Yeah, it's if I'm not like walking around doing my own thing, like with the intention of just it being me, it's going to be my iPhone. I don't because okay. Generally speaking, I'm trying not to carry too much stuff with me, and I don't like carrying around a camera if I don't have to. But you know, that's funny because I am carrying around a camera because it's my phone.
Oh, yes,
but are. I don't ever do video. The last time I did video, I was sitting around after I was working with Mike Kelly, and we were in the Sacramento area, I think, and we had just finished shooting an apartment complex, and we were just drinking water, waiting for the light to change, so we could do the sunset shot, and he started juggling the water bottles, and I took out my iPhone and I did the slow-mo of it because he was doing a horrible job and it was really funny. And I still keep.
Can I guess, was this when you were testing B2s?
No, it was way before that. So, man, this
right,
was
so
like
you took a little
a
video
ago.
Of him juggling water bottles.
Yeah, and I keep that on my phone to laugh once in a while because it's in slow-mo and I can slowly see him lose touch with being able to juggle and it slowly falls apart and I laugh. That's the last video I took on my phone. Everything else is just a still, usually of my dog or when I was at my friend's wedding a couple weeks ago, I got some pictures of us like that are different than the ones the photographer is going to get. That's just us, you know, being friends.
Right.
That's it.
That's interesting. This actually makes me think of another kind of line of subject in question, which is Jaren, because shooting video, I imagine when I have to bring lenses out and I have to like, someone asks me to like actually bring out my camera, I'm like, well, this is now work, right? And shooting video, I imagine, would be work.
Yeah.
But shooting small clips like what you just described as Mike Kelly, that's not work. That's just, I don't know. I feel like that's almost like a Snapchat of what you're doing.
Yep. And it's a Snapchat just for me.
Yeah. I like that. That's good. All right. With that, guys, we're going to wrap this up. And episode 23 is coming into an end. Jaren, yes.
I want to apologize for anyone who saw that we had published the podcast on Tuesday but was not getting it on their feeds until like Wednesday. There was some weird hiccup along the lines with our feed burner. That's the only thing that we use to connect to iTunes. So it fixed itself. It just took another 24
hours.
Did.
Yeah, it took 24 hours. I noticed that.
I tried to fix it a various number of ways, and it didn't do anything. And then while I was...
I thought you told me you did fix it.
I was sitting
you texted me.
I was sitting there sweating about it, and then suddenly it was fixed, so I took credit for it.
Oh. Okay.
I fixed
then.
It.
Well, thank you, Jaren, for fixing it. And thank you guys for joining us. Comments and questions, please reach us on Twitter at Rewrap, R-E-W-R-A-P podcast. And you can also go to resourcemagonline.com. You can email us, rewrap@resourcemagonline.com. And if you like what you hear, please rate us on iTunes and tell other people about us. Have them subscribe. I know quite a few people who are listening to this podcast, Jaren, who are like photo professionals, which are fantastic. I'm happy we got that crowd as well. And then we know other folks like Daniel Mateus, who is emerging into this industry as well. And I love that crowd as well. But I would love to hear more about just what you think and what you got. Like Tony told us that Tony Rosland, commercial product photographer.
Way more successful than me.
Hell yeah. More than me too. But he bought the Icon gimbal, which I am actually secretly still trying to get, Jaren. That we recommended like in episode 2 or like early days. He picked that up. I feel like he picked something else that we talked about.
He bought a GH4 on our recommendation as well.
Ah, he bought that as well.
So like he listens to us every week. He drives to Seattle to do some work and then back to Spokane where he lives, and he listens to us on his way back. So thank you, Tony. We're actually going to have Tony on the podcast here soon. I think we could maybe we can get him next week.
He'll be a guest, and we'll have more guests in the future as well. So today we didn't get anyone on. No one buys mics, Jaren. Seriously, we want people with good audio quality, and they're just not buying mics. I'm looking at you, Billy Murray, who's our editor at the Resource Magazine Online. I keep trying to ask him, like, did you get a mic this week? He's like, no. I'm like, that's great, Billy. You're killing me, Smalls, is what I told him, because he's East Coast.
If we all had bad mics, it'd be less noticeable, but because we have really nice ones, they sound like
garbage. We do have
garbage.
Really nice ones, don't we? We sound beautiful.
We sound so good.
Yeah, we do. And you know what, guys? We really appreciate you listening to that beautiful tones that me and Jaren provide. So he's on Twitter at Jaren Schneider. I'm on Twitter at Karaminder. And this has been the Rewrap Podcast, episode 23.
See y'all next week.
See you here next week.
I beat you to it.
Yeah, you did.